Hey, what's going on, anglers? Welcome to the first Go Fish podcast, where the lines are always tight and the fish are always on. Since this is our first episode, let's just walk you through who we are and introduce ourselves. I'm your host, Brandon Austin, founder of Go Fish Cam.
And I'm his co-host, Hunter Strimple. On this podcast, we're going to be talking about everything fishing. You'll hear epic fish tales from our guest each episode, some tips and tricks, fishing news, and anything your tackle box desires.
If you want to be a guest on the podcast or have a topic you'd like us to discuss, email us at podcast@gofishcam.com or give us a shout at 1-833-8-GO-FISH. Every podcast is going to be paired with a YouTube video, so if we're talking about an epic video, we'll post a link in the description so you can check it out for yourself online. Make sure to tune in each month because we are planning some amazing things coming your way. Hello, hello, hello. How's it going, anglers? Welcome to the Go Fish podcast, where the lines are always tight and the fish are always on. I'm your host, Brandon Austin, and as always, I'm joined here with Hunter Strimple.
Hey, what's going on, y'all? We have a great one for you fishing fanatics today, so grab a cold one, sit back, and stay tuned.
Today for episode one, we're also going to be joined by Brian Smith, who is also on the Go Fish team.
Hey, happy to be here.
So guys, this is podcast numero uno. That's super exciting.
First one.
Yes, it is.
This is something that, you know, we've been wanting to do for a while. We get a lot of questions from our customers, and we also talk to them on the phone all the time. I mean, Hunter, you hear fishing stories day in, day out from our customers, and this kind of was a way to put a platform for that conversation.
Definitely. Yeah, we the amount of fishing stories that I hear on a daily basis is pretty substantial.
Yeah. And don't forget all the fishing videos that we get to watch every single day
too. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. No, lots of videos, and we'll check out
a
couple
tough job, huh?
Super tough job.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm scraping YouTube on the daily basis, so keep them coming in, guys.
Yeah, but we'll review some of those cool videos today as well, you know, something that's kind of interesting that about our team dynamic is, you know, obviously everyone here now loves to fish. And Hunter, you grew up with fishing in your whole life. I grew up fishing my whole life. Brian, you come from a bit of a different background. You never really grew up fishing, and it's something that is kind of new to you that you're getting more into, but I mean, when you first started, we had to kind of teach you every type of fish that was out there. And
yeah.
Now you're starting to learn all the terminology. So
I have a fun fishing background in that it's not a lot of fishing, but fishing in some interesting places and some different styles of fishing. So I've been pretty fortunate to be able to, you know, fish, you know, saltwater, freshwater, kind of different areas in the U.S. and then some places outside the U.S. as well. So every time I go fishing, I feel like I learn something, I'm kind of like the baby who's going out, and people have to kind of teach me what's going on. Hunter included. That was my most recent trip. It was fishing in the Gulf, it's a lot of fun, and I've grown a love for it here, especially working with Go Fish in the past year.
Nice. I've heard the story of your bachelor party fishing outing. I think that, I don't know, Hunter, have you ever heard this story?
I have not, but I'm super excited.
I was just saying, Brian maybe didn't learn how to fish, but he definitely learned how to chum the water.
Oh,
oh
my God.
Did we get seasick, bro?
Oh, we got so seasick. This has been one of the things about fishing that probably made me a little bit more afraid of it, was actually getting out on the open water. I do get seasick, but you know what? I've never turned down a fishing trip either. So the bachelor party one is that fishing story is normally the one that I leave out of of all my other fishing stories. So maybe that's the perfect one for us to talk about. But basically, my wife and I did a destination wedding, and this was in the Dominican Republic. We had some of our close friends and family come out, part of this the day before. My groomsman and my best man scheduled a fishing trip for us, and this was in May, so the weather was perfect. The sun was out; it was beautiful, and we started fishing at, I want to say, like 9 a.m. Right? That's when the boat takes off, And yeah, we've been doing a little bit of drinking the night before, but you know, it was okay. It was okay. I was in good shape. I woke up feeling pretty good about it. You know, we all get on the boat and always in my head, anytime I'm on a boat, I know the feeling of being, you know, kind of seasick. I hate the feeling of being seasick, and I never like to drag anybody else into that. So I just kind of kept it to myself a little bit, but I'm thinking, okay, well, what's going to happen is, you know, maybe about an hour and a half into this, we're going to be out in the open water. I'm going to start to feel it. And about 10 minutes go by, and land is still so close I can touch it, and our boat's moving away from land, and I'm starting to feel a little bit woozy already. So I'm like, oh, this is going to be a rough day. So, of course, the guys on the boat, because I'm the guy who's getting married, of course they have to make my life as miserable as possible. They basically started saying, okay, well, you can drink one of these. And, you know, of course they hand me a warm Mexican beer. Oh. I can't remember what it was. It was definitely warm by the time that I opened it. So you can only imagine how it got as I kept drinking. Mm. But yeah, so warm Mexican beer and about an hour of being on the water. Land was still in sight, and I was already feeling pretty bad. And to Brandon's point, yeah, I definitely chummed the waters that day. I spent most of the day on my back while all of my buddies were catching these really cool fish. I think my cousin caught a mahi-mahi that day. What else did we catch? Maybe there was a tuna out there. I'm not sure. But
wasn't quite seeing over the rails where we were. There may have been a tuna out there. I mean, hell, you can pretty much say whatever you want. Yeah,
but, probably, you know what? Actually, here's the best thing though. The best thing was getting back on dry land after that, and we cooked them right up as soon as we got on land and ate some fish and felt better after that. That for me, like a lot of these fishing stories though, if you know, even if you take that negative element out of it, normally when you go fishing, you're in a state of mind where you're kind of away from the normal work family balance. You're in a different environment and you're having a good time. So I think overall, all of those things made fishing fun for me, despite some of the seasickness. Is that, hey, look, you're out, you're doing something different, you're enjoying nature, and you're learning something. And for that reason, it's never stopped me from getting back out on the water.
Yeah, contrary to I think what people would assume, I mean, the way I've always handled seasickness is I tend to just drink beer like the second we hit the boat and get out there. I don't know why. Beer's always been my best friend on a boat when I go fishing. I think that's probably why the only time I've ever been seasick was like once when I was 14, because, you know, was drinking Kool-Aid instead. But
how about a warm Tecate? That would probably not help you much.
I'm a fan of Mexican beer. I don't know. I'm a fan of like the Coronas and the Tecates.
The biggest thing about preventing seasickness at the end of the day, because I have you know, I'm pretty salty. I've been offshore countless times. I've been in waves where it's when you're down in the belly of a break, you know, you're looking at an 8-foot wall of water on either side of the boat, and you're just going up and down and up and down. And, you know, I've lived in scenarios like that for 2 weeks straight, where I'm on a boat for 2 weeks straight for, you know, oil field work out in the Gulf. And the worst thing that you can possibly do before you're going out there is all of a sudden start thinking to yourself, man, I hope I don't get seasick. Because the moment you put the thought in your head, it lingers in the back of your head, and that will make you seasick more than anything else will.
Maybe and that's so, why beer works for me. I'm like a fly on the wall. I just start buzzing around. Yeah. So I can't keep focus on what, you know, there, how I'm feeling.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few real natural things. You know, I mean, some people like to do the Dramamine patches and take the pills and stuff like that. But for me, those are just human tranquil. And they just make me feel just so tired. Ginger works really well. Ginger ale works really well. Pickles, you know, out of a pickle jar work really, really well. That's all has produced a fairly decent result for a lot of people I've gone off fishing with. But, you know, they'll typically tell you after you're already seasick, it's not going to go away until A, you're off the boat, or B, you're in the water. And I've seen enough Mako videos offshore to where I'm not getting in the water, so we're just going to wait. We're going to go ahead and just be sick.
What do you think about those like bands that put pressure here on your wrist?
I've seen those, and I've actually seen the newer versions of them that they actually have a almost an electronic frequency that's inside of it that you can adjust the frequency, and it'll basically kind of mess with your equilibrium a little bit. And I've seen people kind of demoing them. And what's interesting about those things is that if you put them on and you're not on a boat and you turn them up, you feel really weird. Mm-hmm. But if you're on the boat and you turn them up, you feel normal. And so I guess it's a seasick bracelet when you're on land and a, you know, non-seasick bracelet when you're on the boat. But, you know, I honestly, it's probably a lot of placebo thing, in my opinion, just because everybody that I've ever seen get seasick is the people that's talking about being seasick before they go out.
Well, and that must have been a pretty large number of people you've seen get seasick.
Oh, yeah. Because,
you know, maybe now's a great time to share a bit about your background with the listeners. But you grew up on the coast.
Yep.
You used to do shrimping, chartering.
Yep.
You're kind of all over the place. So I feel like taking a bunch of Brian's out fishing, you've definitely
That's
seen
right.
your fair share of seasickness.
I definitely have. So I grew up in a little town called Port Bolivar. It's the Bolivar Peninsula on the coast of Texas, kind of a little ferry ride away from Galveston. And, you know, it is a little fishing town. You know, I mean, you can pretty much, you know, walk or drive within 10 to 15 minutes in almost any direction and hit some body of water, whether that be, you know, the bay or the Gulf or however that may be. And, you know, I grew up fishing for food, you know, I mean, it wasn't really like a sport thing. And my grandfather had a shrimping license. He built his own shrimp boat, welded it together out of stainless steel in the backyard. I distinctly remember being a little kid and watching him sit in the backyard, with, you know, rolls of twine, making his own shrimp nets, you know, for the entire boat and, putting it all together. And, it was just really interesting, but that's how we always, you know, kind of were raised, you know, live off the fat of the land. And, you know, my grandfather didn't shrimp commercially. I mean, he shrimp because he liked shrimp and he liked to give shrimp to everybody else in the town. And so, but, you know, as I got older, I mean, fishing just became a way of life. And, you know, people would come down to visit from, you know, that didn't live in the coast, people from Houston, people from Austin, just friends of my parents and friends of mine. And they would always come down there to go fishing. And so, I mean, yeah, I mean, I've seen some seasick people. I've seen people that I swear would get seasick sitting in a bathtub. And I've seen people that can be out in 12-foot swells and just be having a great time, like Lieutenant Dan. You know, yeah, I've seen all walks of that. My dad, actually, this is pretty funny. My dad, avid fisherman. I mean, he was one of those people that, you know, the people that knew him, if he wasn't going fishing with them, they would always tell him, can you just pee on a rag so we can throw it in the boat so we'd catch fish? That was a pretty pretty common thing they would tell him because he caught a lot of fish. But the poor man would get seasick in anything greater than 2 feet worth of waves. I mean, we'd be out in the middle of the bay and he would get seasick. And so we very rarely went fishing in the Gulf with him unless it was like a table. And the only time it was ever like that is during the winter, whenever you get a good north wind blowing and it basically lays down the entire Gulf and it just looks like glass. And I mean, obviously that's the best time to go, but you know, those are few and far between. So as a small kid, I didn't get to do a whole lot of offshore fishing for that purpose. But as I got a little older and started you know, talking to more people with offshore boats, I started doing a lot more offshore blue water trips. But, you know, my dad didn't really like to go on those because he said he goes, I can't enjoy it. I'm just going to be sick the whole time. And he put the patches and the pills and he tried all that stuff, you know, and it just didn't work for him, you know. And again, I just think it's because he thought about it too much, you know.
So I know we've talked about this in the past. Growing up, you know, as you just mentioned, you fish for food a lot, right?
Yeah.
And I know you hate shrimp for that matter because
hate's a strong word.
You just had so much of it growing up.
Yeah, hate is a strong word. I can tell you. I mean, it's like pizza's good. A lot of people like pizza, but if you eat pizza every single day for three meals a day for, you know, 10 years, when you go to a restaurant, everybody's like, they have really good pizza there. You're probably going to order a burger. It is what it is. You know, I mean, I had an abundance of shrimp to eat, and people were like, man, you are so lucky. And I was like, dude, when it's what you got and it's all you eat, trust me, you want something different. I mean, you really do. I mean, I remember waking up in the morning and having, you know, sandwiches that had fried shrimp on them. Lunch would be shrimp gumbo. In the evening, it was like, you know, shrimp scampi or, you know, more fried shrimp. But I still eat shrimp. I will still get shrimp on occasion. My wife loves it whenever I make shrimp because, you know, the consequence of eating shrimp my entire life, I can cook the hell out of some shrimp. You know, and so she always enjoys it, but it's not my go-to, no.
Hey, you're our resident fish cooker here at the office. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. Speaking of which, when's the next fish fry? Because it's, you know... That was like beginning of the summer. You teased us. We thought we were gonna have a whole summer of it out.
I'm heading out to Massachusetts this weekend for Labor Day weekend, and I'm gonna head up and do two charter trips. I'm gonna do one for some striper and some fluke, and the next one the next day is gonna be bluefin fishing for tuna, and so that's gonna be super fun. I'm bringing the GoFish cams with me, a little shameless plug there, and we're going to hopefully get some really, really awesome footage, and if I bring home some fish, I'll definitely, you know, bring home some bluefin, but we're not frying that, though, man. I'll slap somebody. Yeah, I mean, we're not going to fry bluefin tuna. Whoever does that should be drug out in the street and shot.
Well, I bet we have a lot of good catch and cook stuff coming up in November. I think that's an interesting thing that we're working on for Thanksgiving. You know, everybody's in the season and of getting together as a family and eating and cooking together. So maybe we could get something exciting going for catch and cook.
Yeah, I mean, I know that a lot of people obviously eat their fair share of turkey during Thanksgiving, but I mean, when you live on the coast, you're getting some great fish that I feel like a lot of families, you know, swap their turkey for a really good fish. So we're going to definitely come out with some really cool recipes. I think something that would be interesting, make some kind of fish stuffing that would taste really good mixed in with the turkey. Is that possible? You think that's something that you can come up with and figure out how to concoct?
Mixing fish with turkey?
I don't know.
I'm sure it can be done, but whether or not you're going to like it or not is an entirely different thing.
Obviously in a way that would be likable.
I mean, they already kind of have a form of fish stuffing, and it's called tuna salad. I wouldn't shove it inside of a turkey.
Well, yeah, we have some spooky plans for Halloween, so if that ends up tasting terrible, we can use that for our spooky Halloween.
Spooky meals. Yeah, it'll be spooky the next day too, I assure you.
We should definitely throw a Thanksgiving feast here, but go fish style, and bring in one of those monsters that you catch offshore and just decorate it, and you know, kind of have our own Thanksgiving feast.
Well, at ICAST last year, they had a huge tuna at the booth across from us that they were just filleting and giving people sashimi that they like brought in, and I mean, it was delicious, but then it was also kind of gross because we had to stare at this giant tuna carcass for like 3 hours. Flies were coming, and it was terrible. But that'd be really cool, having some kind of monster fish here in the office. Do a little cookout. That'd be great.
I love the Wii's and the R's. Like, y'all got like little mice in your pocket and everything, because I'm going to be the one jacking all this crap.
You're going to be there for support.
Yeah, no problem, guys. I'll go ahead and cook y'all Thanksgiving dinner.
I'll take photos. We'll post it and Brian can clean.
Hey, yeah. we eat well around here.
We do eat well. Ever since I've been here, we definitely do. One of the big things that, you know, we would do for Thanksgiving a lot, just because it's not really something that you know, people get a hold of too often. I mean, fish are easy. I mean, they're literally everywhere. Having good steamed crab, you know, and stuff like that during Thanksgiving is always something that we enjoy doing. And so I think for Thanksgiving we can do some, you know, snapper on the half shell, Cajun style, and do some blue crab. And I mean, obviously, if y'all like mud bugs, we can do some crawfish boiling, you know, which is really one of my favorite things. It's a freshwater land shrimp, I guess. Maybe it's close, but it's not really. I will eat crawfish 9 times out of 10 before. If somebody put crawfish versus shrimp in front of me, I'm gonna get down on the crawfish all day.
So. And it's funny because, I mean, you know, I grew up in Canada, fished freshwater most of my life. My mother's Costa Rican, so I grew up saltwater fishing, going down there a lot, and also going to Florida. We would go down there to fish. We'd just fish off the pier in Naples. But crawfish was always this little kind of fake lobster that was in our lakes. I never thought to eat it. And then moving down here to Texas, it's everywhere.
We have crawfish farms, you know, down here. And it's crazy. They are, they're really good if you're hungry and you want to eat 1,000 of something. because you can never get full off of them ever, you know, I like them spicy, but you know, what fills you up is the potatoes and the corn on the cob that they boil with it. You have to have that in there. That way you're somewhat satisfied whenever you leave.
I remember my first crawfish experience. I was in College Station, visiting a friend. We went to a country music festival there. And there was this, everyone was eating crawfish and never even thought about it. I was seeing everyone eating it, but I still hadn't tried it. And I was just walking and some random stranger was just like, was eating these huge crawfish, literally like the size of my fist. Massive compared to what I've seen since. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, I was like, are you just eating lobsters? Like, are those mini lobsters? What are these? And he's like, no, these are crawfish. You've never tried it? And I was like, no. And so we took a photo where we were holding it up in the air, and then it was a photo of my first crawfish bite. And then turns out that guy was also just a Canadian randomly down in College Station, Texas. So I would have thought that a Texan would have been giving me my first crawfish experience. Oh, yeah. But somehow we found each other in this country. Yeah, right.
So, well, I got to ask you a question. So, you know, did you enjoy it? Did you like the crawfish?
I did.
Okay.
I did. Well, as you know, I can't handle spicy food.
I know. That's why I was wondering about
some
that.
Some of the Cajun, if I get too much on it, I'll pour sweat. But you're at a country festival in the middle of summer in Texas, you're sweating anyway, so it's okay.
So, well, there's, you know, down here in the South, you know, there's something very particular that you have to do with the crawfish after you eat the tail.
What's that?
Did you suck the head?
I did not. Not on my first experience.
Oh, man. That's the best part. That is the best part. We're going to have some people that are going to be like, ew. And some people are like, yeah, that's amazing. But that's one of those rites of passage.
Maybe we'll put a poll in the comments. Comment if you would have slurped or sucked the crawfish's head to get the juices out, or if you think that's gross, let us know.
There's only one right answer here, people.
Going after the spicy food, I mean, you've been great at with your fish fries. The spices that you put in, the combination there, have been awesome.
Yeah. No, I use a lot of different stuff. I put garlic in almost everything that I do, but really a lot of it is just proper proportion, salt and pepper, you know.
That and your special shit.
My special shit, yeah, my little seasoning bottle. The thing about it is one of the y'all have only ever eaten the saltwater fish that I bring back. And that's one of the biggest things about that, because, you know, saltwater fish is phenomenally better than freshwater fish. I don't really like freshwater fish. Freshwater fish tastes like mud and failure. Prove me wrong.
I don't think I've ever eaten a freshwater
fish. You've got to season them twice as much to make them taste any kind of different. Whereas a saltwater fish, they're already kind of pre-seasoned. They already got the sodium in them, you know, and so they're just better. But, you know, it's like when you go to restaurants and they say fried fish or fried catfish or something like that. I'm telling you, yeah, it's going to be a piece of fried fish, but, you know, when you grow up on the coast your entire life eating nothing but saltwater fish, and then you go inland a little bit and somebody makes you like white bass or brim or crappie, and they're like, man, these are the best things ever, and I'm going to respectfully disagree. It's not that, they're not as good as saltwater fish, you know. Granted, if I probably would have grew up eating freshwater fish first and then moved into saltwater, I may have a different opinion, but, you know, I'm spoiled rotten, so, you know.
So it's interesting because you grew up fishing probably almost every day of your life.
Yeah.
But you were right on the water, mm-hmm. in a fish town.
Yep.
And Brian, where'd you grow up?
A little complicated of an answer with that. A little bit in Virginia, Baltimore area, and then also Oregon for when I was a little bit older. And then after high school, college years, it was more in the middle, you know, the middle area, Texas. Oh, actually, a little bit in Toronto as well. So a little bit of all over. So fishing wasn't really part of my story growing up. You know, really the only first time I fished was when I was, geez, how old was I? Must have been like 20 years old, maybe 19 is the first time that somebody taught me how to fish, you know, which is crazy.
That's
right?
So
you know,
hunters. So sad.
But it was so. But at the same time, it was kind of interesting. You know, like the first place I went fishing was in the Snake River in Idaho, and the Snake River is basically the border between Oregon and Idaho.
A lot of smallmouth.
Yeah, a lot of smallmouth
in that river.
It's not too far outside of Boise,
mm-hmm.
and we went to go line fishing for steelhead, and I can't really remember what month it was, but basically the steelhead are saltwater trout, and they're coming in upstream through the tributaries around there and around the Snake River. So there's certain periods of the year where the fishing is just, it's phenomenal, right? And we ended up, I ended up going with a college friend and their family, and basically like their family taught me, you know, what to do and how to hold the rod and how to tie everything on. And I ended up snagging one, which I thought was really awesome. You know, at first I was thinking, oh no, what am I doing? My line would get tangled and I'd have to cut it every once in a while. But I ended up actually catching a steelhead. We threw it back because they're very particular about what you can catch and what you can keep. Mm-hmm. I believe they cut off a fin, so they actually clip a fin off of the steelhead that come from a hatchery, and you can take those home, the ones that come from a hatchery. But if the fin is still located, Hunter, maybe you'll know, it's not a dorsal fin, but there's like a fin that's, so I mean, you've got your tail at the end and right on his back, right close to the mm-hmm. tail, you've got yeah. just that little fin,
yeah,
that's the fin that they clip off. And the one that I pulled up was a wild steelhead. So gotcha. it had the fin on it. So basically it was just good enough for a sweet picture for my first fish. Yeah. And then took that hook out and threw them back in the water, and then they went off to spawn. So yeah. It was really cool. I mean, like, again, you know, going back to that was such an interesting experience because, you know, you're in the middle of these beautiful mountains. Middle of nowhere. There's no cell phone service anywhere. The only thing that you're thinking about is you're enjoying the peace and quiet, the sound of the river, and you know, the calm of the mountains and breezes going through the trees. And again, guys, if you haven't been to Idaho, I know Hunter's been to Idaho.
I have.
But if
giant Mormon crickets, they were everywhere.
Yeah. What is a giant Mormon cricket?
It is a cricket that is a giant. And it's basically a cricket that's probably about 2.5-3 inches long. I recommend everybody take a moment right now and Google Mormon cricket.
I've got
it. I almost have to do this.
It is the most terrifying looking thing. And every couple of years, they from the local lore that I was told around here, apparently, because we're driving out to the spot on the Boise River, I believe, and we were going to go do some fly fishing. I'd never fly fished before. It was something I was going to try. I mean, I'm not against fly fishing, but to me, it's kind of like ribbon dancing, but you know, it is what it is. I had fun. But anyway, when we're driving out there, the road was literally black, and there was it looked like it was moving. And I said, and I was with my father-in-law, and I said, man, what is this? And he goes, oh, those are Mormon crickets. There's so many that they're people running over them. It paints the entire road black, and whenever you run over one and kill it, its buddies come up from the side of the road and they eat him. And they're just everywhere. They're terrifying.
It's like a murder hornet of the crickets.
It is. They're giant crickets, and they've got, you know, pretty decent little mandibles on them. And like I said, they eat each other. And they're just, if you have any kind of bugophobia at all, it's not a place to be whenever those are around, because I mean, it's terrifying. See, me, I grew up on the coast with a lot of palm trees. where our palm, what lives in our palm trees is what we call palmetto bugs, you know, which is basically a giant flying cockroach. And so you grow up with a healthy fear of those things because they go for the face anytime they're on the side of a wall. They just fly right in your face. And these are a little bigger than that. And so they're, you'll have a healthy fear of them for sure. They're pretty creepy. So, but yeah, I advise, look those up. I'm telling you, you want to see a scary mutant Hulk cricket? Yeah, they're everywhere.
Sounds like the makings of a good horror movie.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they're not good bait either. We tried. They're not even good for that.
So, Brandon, you've been on all sorts of interesting fishing adventures. Like, you've lived all over the place. What's been your favorite place to fish, and what are some of your fondest memories?
So Naples, Florida has really amazing fishing, and I've always enjoyed going and fishing. I've only been on a boat fishing once in Naples. Every time I go, it's just off the pier, but you meet such a great group of anglers when you're out on the pier. I feel like I was Karate Kid and like there was Mr. Miyagi's everywhere. The amount of old dudes when I was a teenager just fishing by myself, because my family never really liked to fish, so we'd go to the beach and everyone would post up on a chair and an umbrella and I'd say bye, take a tackle box and my fishing rod, and they wouldn't see me until we were ready to leave. And I would just be making friends with all these wise old anglers who would just give me little homemade trinkets that they would build for catching bait or catching fish. And so they would like share all this insight with me. And it was super interesting because I remember growing up as a kid, I would go and you would use shrimp and you'd catch things every single time you're out there. And as I got into, I would say like 14 to 17 age range, I could not catch anything with shrimp off that pier. But all of these guys were using bright, bright pink metal weighted lures. And there was no bait on it. And you would just drop it up and down and they would catch fish left, right, and center. And so I went and got some of those. I was starting to catch fish again. Then I remember the next year I went and those weren't catching fish at all. And the next time it was these tiny little minnows and you couldn't really go and buy them at the store. They didn't want them. They wanted them fresh. Like the fish were only eating them if they're fresh. And so that's where I met this Mr. Miyagi kind of guy. And he had this homemade built, he took kind of like a hanger, like this little iron rod. And he made it tiny little loops that were just about the size of the body of the minnows. And there was a pink threaded string that ran through it, so that you would just drop it off the dock. This, it was like maybe 12 little loops with a weight at the bottom, and you would drop it off the side of the dock and these little minnows would swim at the pink and they would get stuck. And so you just pull it up and you'd have like 12 fresh minnows and you just dump them into a bucket, and every time you dropped it you'd have a full 12 rings. Wow. And then you would just hook them and cast them out there or drop them out there with weight, and it worked every single time. It was amazing.
It's like a little bitty gill net.
It was
MacGyver stuff there too.
I remember the next year when I came back, it was kind of like rusted out, so I tried to like rebuild one of those and I couldn't. Like it was, I don't know how he, I couldn't find it at any store, so he had to have made it himself, but he let me keep it after showing me how to use it. So it was super fun. Costa Rica has my heart for fishing, although recently I went to Venice, Louisiana, and that has some of the best tuna fishing. I mean, every time you go out there and every single boat that's going out there is coming back with 3 or 4 massive tunas. Wow.
I've been to Venice, Louisiana. That's way out there. Like, it's basically just the tip of Louisiana when it meets the Gulf.
Yeah, it's right at the tip, but there is some amazing offshore fishing and bay fishing there. I mean, we limited out. I've gone twice now. Both times that we've gone inshore, we've limited out maybe in the first like 18 minutes, and then we're just fishing for fun. Cool. And then I've been offshore fishing once, and maybe like 50-minute drive out there, but once you're out there, you're catching tuna left, right, and center. They're just chumming the waters. There's shark everywhere. There's tuna everywhere, and these things are massive. And we got some video on the Go Fish, and it was really interesting because tuna are so finicky, and you'll probably see this when you're in Massachusetts, but they'll come and they'll pick up the bait in their mouth, and they won't swallow it. The hook won't really get them. They'll spit it out. and then they'll just keep swimming on. But they're just hand feeding these tuna. I mean, they're just tossing out the bait with a hook in it.
Big yellowfin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. That was definitely my most recent adventure for fishing. That was it'll be a lifetime memory. It was very awesome. I went with the guys who run Outdoors 360, so it was a really good crew, and we had like a full lodge for a couple nights, and it was fun. I mean, speaking of video, you know, being on GoFish Cam, obviously we see a lot of those. What's been your favorite videos from our customers?
Oh my gosh, there's been so many. Hunter, do you have one that comes to the top of your mind first?
I like the one that Chris sent over from Lightning Strike Fishing down in Florida, where that sailfish.
That was a cool one.
That was probably one of my top fives. Really, the one holding my top spot is actually one that I got, and it was on my last offshore trip. And we were trolling a ballyhoo, and we had a barracuda come up, and the barracuda bypassed the ballyhoo and the bait altogether, and he saw, I guess, the reflection on the lens of the camera, because barracuda are pretty much attracted to anything that glares or has a shine to it. They just come up in it. And, you know, he came probably half inch to an inch away from the camera and opened his mouth and showed all of his teeth and then popped the camera and then swam off. And when we slowed that down, that was probably one of the most incredible shots that I'd seen. And it was just really neat to see how the barracuda's teeth, you know, kind of recess into his mouth, and the holes that are in the upper part of his mouth and the bottom part of his mouth where all these teeth fit into place. Because when he opens his mouth, you're like, where does he put those things whenever that mouth is shut? And you get to see all of that. And that was a pretty incredible shot. But, you know, also in that top five is our classic bull shark video. I mean, the shark videos are incredible, man. I mean, they really are.
That shark video, that was part of one of our shark research group collaborations. And that was in Africa that video was caught, in Mozambique.
Yeah.
That shark video is awesome.
Yeah,
just watching it come and grab that tuna, and then it doesn't get hooked, so you see the blood trailing off the tuna and it ends up coming back. I mean, that was pure Jaws moment right there.
Yeah, he comes up and just straight cuts the tuna in half, you know. And so they're for those listening, he was using, I believe, a blackfin tuna bridled, which is a pretty common bait that a lot of people use for marlin. And that's pretty much what happened. The shark comes swimming up, and you could see all the remoras and the other fish that are, you know, hanging out with this shark. And he comes up and just a real quick bite, and that tuna looked like he was cut in half clean. And he had a blood trail coming off of him. And then all of a sudden the shark comes back and hits him again. And what was really interesting about that video is that, you know, we're still pretty shallow when he first hits. And when he hits, the blood from the tuna is coming out of the shark's gills, and the shark just brings him down deeper and deeper and deeper. And the deeper he goes, the red from that blood completely goes away and turns green, because that red spectrum can't exist at that depth because of the light penetration underwater. And it was just really interesting to see that. I thought that was really, really cool.
And for the listeners, we'll post all these videos on YouTube. You'll be able to search videos from episode one podcast, and you'll be able to find them all there, so you can check them out as well. But I think my favorite one was definitely where the one barracuda, or the one wahoo, got caught on the hook, and then the barracuda came and ate the wahoo, and then another barracuda almost came and ate him.
Yeah. little food chain shot.
Yeah, we almost had that triple shot. That was insane.
Yeah.
And I also love some of these bass fishing videos too. I mean, seeing just the bass smash these crankbaits or smash some of these topwater lures, and even those umbrella rigs,
I've seen
them get double or triple hooked up. Yeah. I mean, it's super cool.
A lot of swim baits too, because a swim bait works incredibly well with our camera, and you really see the presentation. And then watching a bass stalk a swim bait and then come up, and especially seeing largemouth bass, because I mean, it's like you don't really realize how much they open that mouth to suck those baits up until you actually see it, you know, on that camera in that 1080. It just, like, the whole lure just disappears, gone. It's so fast. That's why I really like, you know, when I tell everybody the best thing about the camera is the 60 frames per second, because you have to have it. I mean, if you didn't have the 60 frames per second, if you had something like a 30 frames per second, you wouldn't be able to capture it. You really wouldn't, because every time I get those fish strikes, I always isolate that strike and I'll slow it down, and my little programs are on my phone so I can actually see that entire process in slow motion. And it's really, really cool.
You got to take that shiny camera that we have dressed up as a lure in the back and...
that one that somebody sent us back?
You got to go see if you can get a bass to swallow the cameras, like how we've got like pike and barracuda and stuff to do.
I can probably get a bass to swallow that camera. I'm going to have to get on the bite, you know, because I know there's times when I can go out and it doesn't matter what I throw in the water, especially in like there's an area over in Travis where it's about 30, 40 foot deep, but there's a couple of little underwater cliffs right there. And a lot of what we call little dink bass will school there. They're probably 2 pound a piece, and they're all the same size. But it doesn't matter what you throw in the water, they'll hit it. And because they're all out there schooling. And I think in one of those scenarios, yeah, I could probably get a bass to try to swallow that camera. It'd be really cool.
You know, all the action shots that we get are just classic. They're kind of amazing, but it gets me thinking, some of the cool shots we also get are the times that maybe you don't catch something, or you see something that you didn't quite expect. Hunter and I were in Puyallup, Washington at a trade show there. A shout out to everybody who's from Washington, by the way. That's a great show. One of the guys, I can't remember, I got to find his business card, but he showed us one of the videos that he caught of his GoFish cam going through a school of jellyfish.
Yeah.
And it was so cool. I mean, basically it was like, it was one of the most interesting artistic shots that you could get.
It was.
And if anything, you know, he probably pulled his camera footage back and at first was maybe a little frustrated. He wasn't in the right area, or oh, there's no fish down there, there's just jellies. But, you know, for most people that, you know, would see that footage maybe from the other side of the world or the other coast, would look at that and just be fascinated by it. It was really neat. And then Hunter, actually, you pulled up some great footage as well of some hardhead catfish.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
With some speckled trout. I mean, that in itself was neat.
It's the amount of information that you can get from this camera that, you know, you would not previously be privy to is amazing. And, you know, to go back to your the Washington story when I was up there with you doing that trade show in Puyallup, you know, the gentleman came up and he had his laptop with him, and, you know, and he literally just came up to our booth and he said, I've got to show you all this, because he said, because before the camera, he was looking at his depth finder, and the depth finder was showing marks at like thick marks at a pretty low depth. And they were assuming it was bait or it was fish and everything like that, because, you know, all you're going to do is just get the mark on the depth finder. Well, when they pulled the camera and looked, there wasn't a fish one. Technically they're all made out of jelly, but it was all jellyfish, you know, I mean. And so the camera told him that it's not a school of bait fish and it's not a school of target fish. It's just a bunch of jellyfish, which is, I mean, really useful information, all things considered. So yeah, we can move on. But he would have never known that. But same thing with me is that, you know, I was doing some fishing for speckled trout down on the coast, and you know, we posted this video pretty recently, and I'm doing wade fishing under popping corks, and you know, I had the camera hanging underneath the popping cork, and our entire lives living on the coast, I mean, it's just a thing with hardhead catfish, is that if you catch one of those or they're in the area, you need to move, because, I mean, it's just a trash fish. There's nothing else there. I mean, people say, well, if a hardhead hit my bait, I mean, there's people that would literally change the bait off of their hook if a hardhead bites it. And they get their bait back because they will dub it too nasty for any other fish to hit, because a hardhead only eats nasty stuff. I mean, it has gotten that bad in the way of hardhead discrimination. And so on this particular trip I was on, when I pulled the camera back in and took a look at it, because I was catching hardhead where I was at, but I was also catching specks. And when I looked at the footage, there was hardhead after speckled trout after hardhead after speckled trout, and basically it was hardhead and speckled trout schooling together, fighting one another for that Gulf shrimp that I had on the end of the line. And I just thought that's nuts. you know, and that piece of information was incredibly useful because, again, now I know that, you know, if I'm out fishing and I catch a hardhead or two, that doesn't mean that that's the only fish that's there. It just means that that's who got to the bait first. You know, we still got a chance on something else. But I thought that that was really, really cool information.
Yeah, lots of stuff. And, you know, in future episodes, our plan is to bring a lot of really interesting anglers, a lot of really interesting stories, and hopefully help keep teaching people a lot of new insight, like this hardhead catfish and speckled trout myth that we busted. Yep. Brian, you know, thanks so much for joining us today. Guys, you know, that was a great first podcast, and it was an absolute pleasure. To the Go Fish family out there, thank you for tuning in to the Go Fish podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at GoFishCam, and to sign up for our newsletter at GoFishCam.com so that you can stay updated on future podcasts and everything Go Fish. And don't forget, if you want to be a guest on the podcast or you have a topic you'd like us to discuss, email us at podcast@GoFishCam.com. Or give us a shout at 1-833-8-GO-FISH and speak with either myself or Hunter or Brian. If you want to see any of the videos that we discussed on today's podcast, just go on YouTube and search for Go Fish Podcast Episode 1, and you'll be able to check out all the videos there. And until next time, tight lines, guys.